The difference in women's career tracks, you see it easily in ASA statistics right here. Because we are like 26% women members, and as of Sunday night, we'll be at 13% ASA fellows. The difference between members and fellows tends to be, it's three things primarily. In its professional competence, recognition, excellence, its service to ASA, and its service or prominence in the faith science area, perhaps outside of ASA in some way with some other association or some other publications or something like that. And as women struggle with being drawn to, and I assume this, we've not run a survey to gather the data, but as women focus on maternal instincts and desires about the family and feeling more torn between allegiance to jobs and allegiance to family, we don't always have the strong track records of professional accomplishments and service that men have. It's harder to put together a justification package for a lot of women. You know, they've stopped their career. I had one, I was trying to put together a fellow package for a woman in ASA, but she had stopped her career, very prestigious career, after 2 years because her husband got a job in California and she decided to stay home with the kids. Boom. That's not going to make her a good fellow candidate. And I'm not saying we should change the fellow criteria, but it's a fact of life. There will always be less women in leadership roles in ASA because of our focus on hard sciences and engineering and things like that.
I'm going to jump ahead of the comment that I've been wanting to make all along and ask about that. Mm-hmm. I know that in my field in agricultural research, there are a lot of women now, more than half are women. And the non-Christians want to have children and families as well. Land-grant universities, where many of them work, don't have, as you mentioned, the option for two people in one tenure-track position. But often they could, especially if the two are complementary in their gifts, which would be, you wouldn't choose your spouse for that, but you might. And I'm not volunteering for this, but could this group take some leadership and sort of start proposing models and discussing them at national meetings and things like that?
You mean like family career models?
Yeah.
We're trying to do a little panel here, get started with that kind of thing.
Maybe.
Because, you know, role models or discussion is one way to get these things out into the open and to learn from others. I mean, that's what role models are all about, is learning from other people.
Yeah, we could give some national leadership in that.
Yeah, but I wonder, and I have not seen any studies, but I wonder what the differences are in women's attitudes and women's level of accomplishments in Christian communities versus secular communities. Mm-hmm. How much does the biblical role of women affect our choices? Whereas your secular people want to have kids, but they may be far more willing to take the chances of full-time daycare or whatever to pursue equal goals with their husbands, whereas a Christian woman may just not want to try.
My guess would be that they are more willing because it's never occurred to them that there could be anything else.
Yeah, yeah. Whereas Christian women were brought up in different
philosophy.
And
if they had a choice, they might try it.
Mm-hmm. I think Christian men are brought up in that different philosophy too, though. I mean, it gets back to Gail talking about, you didn't say this baldly, but choose your date wisely.
Choose your date wisely.
I remember when my son was 6 months old, and he was a terrible sleeper. And I was working full time, and I was just like beside myself. And I said, I want to resign. You know, I'll find another job sometime. And my husband said, you're gonna be miserable. No way. You know, we're in it together, right? And he was, and you know, with bonding, he in those first 6 months took off as much time as I did. And, you know, worked his, we didn't go on vacation, but, you know, he worked his schedule to fit with mine. So we were geriatric by the time we had children, but.
geriatric.
But, so that might have played into it too, but, you know, he went into it with the assumption that he was going to parent. And I think that's a big thing and a big assumption that isn't something to take for granted. Mm-hmm. If you're dating a guy in the church, right? They might be making the opposite assumption. So you need to be open about that and talk about it. And if that's not you, that's cool too, right? I mean, there's lots of women who really do want to work part-time or not at all when the kids are little, and that's important for the guy to know about too. I think choosing a date wisely, 19 or whatever.
But advocating for better work-life balance in scientific careers, I think, is a key issue. Because I know lots of guys who are working 80 hours a week and never see their kids.
And they're miserable too.
Right.
Yeah.
No, right.
That's
so
not healthy for anyone.
If advanced science, leadership, so on, means you have to dedicate 80 hours of your life.
Right.
Well, I'm not sure that's sustainable for anybody. And as Christians, certainly, we should be advocating.
Absolutely.
There's got to be a better way.
One of the things that comes up with this, though, is the support or lack thereof that we get from our Christian community. I always felt in the church where my husband and I attended until 2 years ago that I was looked down upon and disapproved of by the other women because I had a child who was gay working. Hmm. Now, the same community also looked down on us because we thought the earth probably wasn't 6,000 years old and God probably used evolution. They kind of go together. They don't have to, but they do. Finding a church community is tough that will recognize those two roles. And ASA can be, for that problem, the same thing it is for science.
It could be worse.
Point.
You could be over 20 and still single.
Yes.
Okay, I can speak to that. I'm over 20 and I'm still single. And for those of you that have just come in the room more recently, I mentioned earlier the reason I got the fellowship that I got for grad school was because it was a time in my profession where there were almost no women. And they were looking for women candidates, and they saw my application, and said, oh, there's one, quick, go grab her. It was actually, I actually got offered several very prestigious ones. I had to choose, my goodness. But then, of course, when I got in, I was, oh my goodness, this is so far over my head. So I worked late every night, I worked all day every Saturday, I worked Sunday except for the time I spent in church, because by that time I knew I needed prayer. And what does that say about... Imagine that there had been another woman at the same time who was trying to honor her family and be with her family on the weekends and at nights. I in theory, could have way out-competed her. How could I have shown love and respect for a married colleague, even some of my male colleagues that were maybe trying to spend time with their families? And not even talking about being on from 8 to 5 yet, but you were mentioning someone in here being there from 5 to 8 when they're awake. How could I have helped my married colleagues in that? How could a young woman today, what would a young woman today do in that situation where, as I just mentioned, more than half of the students and young professionals are women, so one assumes that there's a normal bell-shaped curve of intelligence there. The best scientists. I don't even know how to address that, and yet it's something that we're kind of doing to ourselves. At least some of us are doing that to ourselves, making it harder for people with families, rather than respecting that as non-work time.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting. There was an article in Time magazine 2-3 weeks ago about the lack of vacation. People in America don't take vacations. People work through their vacation time. And at my laboratory, where I spent 26 years, much of it, you know, working incredibly hard and then managing incredibly hard workers, these 20-somethings just starting their families, and I'm lecturing them, no, I don't want you to spend this weekend working on this hot deadline. Go spend time with your 2-year-old. You know, I'm trying to tone them down. Because, and we weren't very competitive. We're a very collaborative atmosphere, so it wasn't all that much competition. But it's a sense of pride, a personal pride, and in general, professional pride. And they just wanted to achieve. And I'm trying to get them to realize, because they're so young, that
it's okay to take some time for yourself. So we get a problem culturally about that. And then, you know, the single ones are working like crazy, and it's setting the bar for the married ones with little kids to also be working like crazy. I have to tell you a very, very brief story. A very dear friend of mine, maybe 58, 59, all of a sudden had a major aneurysm and died, and went to Byron's funeral, and Byron's boss was there. And Byron's boss, you know how in funerals sometimes you can get up and have the microphone and tell a story about, you know, your friend or whatever. She's telling this group of family and friends how grateful she was that in the last 3 weeks of his life, Byron spent so many hours working to set up this wind turbine system at the Capitol Mall in Washington, and we're all sitting there thinking, oh my God, the job killed him. You know, and that's what some of our jobs can be, academic and other places. And as Christians, I think we're called to an even higher standard than that, to be in balance, to be in relationship with God. And I'm standing here talking about balance, where, I mean, I was a horrible example of balance my whole life. But I do know how important it is to try to do that a lot better than I ever did. And now I've been retired 2 years, and I'm finally figuring out how to live a far more balanced life. Not everybody can retire at 60. So. All right. You have the floor here, dear.
Question?
Comment on that. I mean, as a single person myself, one of the things that I've really worked hard is to integrate with families. And so there are kids who I'm practically a second mother to. And that's been rich not only for me, but also for their overworked parents, because I can take kids for a while and that kind of thing. So I get some of the richness of family life, and they get a little bit of a break from what is too big of a thing for two people to carry. And because of the way mobile jobs work now, they're usually living away from their family structure's support as well. So having a more dynamic and open view to the nuclear family, I think, is important.
Interesting.
I have a philosophical question for the ladies up here about kind of what Anne was talking about, getting fellowships just because you're a woman. And there's this idea that because there are fewer females in the sciences, that, you know, the pendulum has swung over to the male side, so we need to swing it way over, you know, give women more of a chance. Even having that lunch, at lunch, where it's just for women, I think if the men had done that, we wouldn't have liked that, right?
Yeah.
If the men had a men's, like, cigar session that no women allowed, that would not have been cool. So we need to do that because we're trying to swing the pendulum over. But at what, and there's a term after the civil rights, I want to say, like, positive...
Affirmative action.
Thank you. So, like, the idea of affirmative action for the female gender in sciences, I don't really know what my question is, but I guess I don't know how to think about that. Like, part of me isn't that comfortable with it because I feel like sometimes I'm actually given opportunities that I don't deserve because I'm a female, and there's a white male over here who's, like, probably more qualified than me, but he's not going to get it. What do you guys think about that?
I just want to amplify your question rather than answer it. I work in Washington, D.C. in a federal executive branch department, and I'm frequently in meetings where there are only women, or mostly, but often only, and it can be, well, the secretary right now is a man, but there has been a woman secretary, and woman undersecretary, woman special assistant, woman chief of staff, woman national program leader. And we're joking, but we are starting to think, you know, we've got to do some affirmative action for men. And especially European ancestry men are the only group that don't have any affirmative action program. And they're in certain places, they are the minority. So it's a real question. How are we going to find the balance and ease our way into it?
Well, I can say something about that because at the National Renewable Energy Lab, I was in management for a lot of years, and definitely in the early years of a 26-year career, we heard all about the affirmative action goals, and they ran statistics, and not just men, women, but also minorities of various stripes and so on and so forth. But gradually, it became just hire the absolute best person, and we'll be sure to try to get you a diverse set of candidates. So sometimes I had to push and prod HR to say, look, you've given me all men. Come on. Let's dig a little harder. Or these last names look like they're all European background. Can we find some Hispanic or Latino background people to bring in here? So I had to still fight to make sure it was a fair set to choose from, but I was always encouraged to hire the best. Did not have to meet numbers one place or the other. And I hope I'm confident of that in this day and age, because as a woman, I benefited from affirmative action in the 60s and 70s, but I'm the mother of two sons who have white skin, and I want them to have fair shots too.
Yeah.
So I still think in this day and age that a lot of African Americans still experience racism. In my community in Colorado, there's a lot of Latinos that experience racism, and as individuals, we need to be aware of that. But I don't know that we need programs, in my opinion, anymore, and we need to be counting quotas any longer like we did in the 60s and 70s. And maybe I'm too idealistic that individual hiring managers or company leadership can be fair. Anyway.
In Washington, we see a lot of outstanding African-American women. In that sense, the affirmative action has been successful.
And yeah, brought them up to that point.
And people that you would hire in any case, just looking at who's the best qualified. But there are almost no African American men.
Yeah. Is that a culture thing?
Is that a culture thing?
Societal thing?
I don't know, but they're not there.
One of the interesting things about women in engineering is that MIT and Stanford are closing in on 50% women in mechanical engineering.
Woo!
Wow, amazing.
Yeah.
Well, why is that? Well, because they are so selective that they can choose out of their pool whatever ratio they want. And they're not taking women who are less qualified. Those students are all super qualified, and it's pretty much a, you know, pick them out of a hat, right? So if you decide you want to have more women, you just decide. Now, does that disadvantage men? Yeah, maybe. I don't think it's a levels thing. I mean, that really is, to get into MIT probably is a draw your name out of a hat kind of thing anyway for anybody. But, you know, we can't get anywhere near that because we're not selective. So we're taking anybody who shows up at our door, and the women don't show up. So then it's a matter, like Lynn said, of widening the pool. And now I got a scholarship when I was in grad school because I was a woman at Michigan State. So they were trying to increase their number of grad students. You know, it's hard to compare that because they wouldn't have had the money if they hadn't decided to offer it to women students. So I don't know that I took an opportunity away from any male students. But that did lend a feeling, a little bit of a feeling of tokenism, right? I'm only here because
I'm
a woman.
Yeah, tokenism is an interesting phenomenon.
But I think our focus is now, too, when we hire, it's not on numbers or giving an advantage to certain groups. It's making sure we're being fair in our process and opening the candidate pool to as many good people as possible. Because there's no such thing as comparing two equal people, right? I mean, they're individual people with their individual portfolios. And if over the last 50 years you've done something that has really disadvantaged the women because of, we were talking about this at dinner last night, judging academic work by sort of male standards that have been the standards for centuries, right? And women have different approaches to research, and maybe they don't accumulate things the same way. You know, the metrics are might be different. If you can recognize that, then you can pick your candidates on their individual qualities, not on, I want to say colorblind, ethnicity blind, whatever. That's what we're all aiming for eventually, but we're not there yet. So I'm a little comfortable with some evening out in some places, because I think it'll get us to a better place later. But I'm not a white male, so I
I don't know if it's possible when you're looking for a job to get a sense of your organization's hiring policies, but in my place of where I spent my career, they hammered diversity at us, and the value of diversity in teams. We're extremely collaborative. Everything is done in a team. And the value of having men and women, old and young, this cultural background and that cultural background. And being a large internationally oriented laboratory, you know, you wanted to get people of different, even, you know, a Middle Eastern physicist and a Chinese somebody or other on your team, because they would bring different perspectives. And I truly came to believe in that. I did plenty of exercises to demonstrate the value of teamwork, and I found out I am miserable alone. And, you know, when you check these boxes of do you like to work alone or do you like to work in teams, I like to work in teams. Other people can help me be far more effective. So if you can get into an organization that has that kind of philosophy, you don't have to worry too much about tokenism or being depriving, you know, somebody else of their job, because they should be doing a good job of picking a mixture of people who work on their problems. I've talked to a bunch of you around interdisciplinary interests, and it's the same kind of a thing. You want to get people of different technical disciplines to tackle your problems, make teams of those. So that's a trend I see all over the world that I really like.
I think in job hunting you can, as a woman, ask that question flat out, though you should understand that they can't ask you.
True.
But if you're job hunting, you can say, what is your policy regarding gender? What are you going to do with your applicant list? What are you going to do with the women? Are you going to have to have a quota? We have to, as a state institution, we have to explain why any woman or minority, except Chinese aren't minorities. This may be news to you, but there are no women in China.
No women in China.
No. Chinese are not women. But anyway, anyone who gets qualified as a minority, you have to write down exactly why you didn't hire that person. You don't have to do that for the WASPs, for the male WASPs, but you do have to do that. And so you can ask. Ask flat out. You can ask the department head or ask a woman who's on the faculty. So what are they going to do? And I suppose they don't have to be honest with you, but if you felt like they weren't being honest with you, you don't do your job either.
Yeah.
But you should realize that they can't ask you. They're not allowed.
But just to speak to you, is if you are given an opportunity and God is with you, go and be that role model for the next generation.
Yeah.
Mentor younger women. Because I had a couple of women along the road, and I'm like, oh man, you know, Jane Goodall, gosh, Madam Curie. We need women out there to go, yeah. Because when I went to University of California, there were definitely, I had to call teachers out on not wanting to give me the time in office hours because I wasn't going to be anything but a wife or a mother. And I was so offended, and I called them out. And so here we are. Where are we going to get the strength when that kind of stuff comes? Is first off, be centered with Christ and God. But if you, your door's open, man, and you want to go, you know, go. I think it's awesome.
And just to jump on that, certainly my students, my high school students are thirsty. My girls are hungry to find female role models. And I think, you know, affirmative action, I agree that it's uncomfortable. I don't think it's a long-term ideal that we should, you know, systems to stay in. But if it's created some wonderful role models for people like you and me, Hannah, that are now, like, you know, now coming along under their mentorship, the more resources the younger generation has, the more highly qualified the women will be, and they won't need the affirmative action anymore, and there will be equal number, you know. So it's kind of, I mean, a necessary evil might be a little too strong of a phrase, but it's, I think it's in the long run getting us where I think we all want to be.
Okay. Let me mention two things about role models from an ASA viewpoint. We try within Christian Women in Science to have the availability of short two-pagers that are an answer to 6 questions about science, faith, career, and choices that are written by women up there. I need more of them, so I'm going to be hitting up several people to write more for them, for me, because you can then look at these at your leisure. The other thing we're just starting is this Nexus Forum, and it's all about life and career stuff. It's about all the stuff we've been talking about. And it has a structure to it, so it won't get out of hand, but it is for men also. It's for anybody with these life career questions, so that we can share information. And being all members, it's not a public thing, it's an ASA member only, her names are on there. So, you know, if you want to then interact, if somebody writes an answer to a question that you think is particularly appropriate for your
life, you can contact them individually. And in that way, we can sort of mentor each other and help each other past the annual meeting. You know, Monday midday, we're all gonna head home and we're not gonna see each other maybe physically for another year. But this is a way we can continue to be in dialogue about these things.
Thanks, question for the panel. So I finished a very long course of research on this exact topic.
Oh, bless your heart.
Senior thesis, actually. So the striking data that I found was not actually the percentage of males or females that were hired, but it was actually the percentage that were interested or that applied. Because with affirmative action, you know, if you have 80% applicants male and 20% female, and you have 50% male-female who are taken and hired, well, so you can then say, like, oh, we have great diversity. Well, not really in your applicants, only the people you choose. So my question to the panel is, what do you think is the best way to generate interest for girls? You know, I found in my research, I found that the earlier you generate interest, the better. So what's like the best venue, what's the best opportunity that you can think, like, oh, if someone had gotten me at, you know, X age, I would have answered so many questions earlier for me.
In 5 minutes or less, because that's where we're at.
I'll jump on this because the program I was just in spent a lot of time talking about getting girls engaged in STEM. And one of the biggest indicator that from the research that I've read about whether or not girls go into STEM fields is not GPA, it's not family, it's not a lot of those things. It's in the middle school years, like 12 to 13, if you can get them interested in science then, that has much more sticking power than anything that happens after that point. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of that has to do with the social pressures. You get into high school and there's a million other things competing for your attention and a million biases that are telling you that girls go into the humanities, boys do the sciences, and that's just not as prevalent in the younger grades. So if you can get them attached to science before high school, they're way, way, way more likely to stick with it because there's no inequality in interest in science at those younger ages. It shows up once you hit high school. And I have that sense of my students are primarily juniors and seniors, and I can see girls who have the skill, the sort of intellectual giftings to be good at science and seem to enjoy but have written themselves off mm-hmm. already, and it's sometimes often too deeply embedded mm-hmm. At that point. And so I think it's very much of a early education mm-hmm. makes an enormous difference.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
My impression.
That agrees fully with my experience.
Yeah.
How do you do that without just making math more pink?
Yeah. Well, yeah. I do blocks. That's what it's all about.
I mean, I think a lot of that is the is making it, whether explicitly or implicitly, clear that science isn't a boy's thing. Because
right.
I think that is the perception that you get, even at those younger ages, is that boys get to go dissect things and that sort of thing. And I think a lot of it is just telling girls that they're good at it, affirming
right.
them and that they're capable and that they can do that, because that's not something that they are being told
it's
explicitly.
The mirror you show them. I know in my area, I've been very encouraged as a grandmother now. Okay, I'm dealing with the next generation. I got 4 grandkids, 3 are girls, 4 to 11. My local Museum of Nature and Science in Denver and University of Colorado Boulder both put on wonderful science programs for kids, and they advertise just as much for girls as they do boys. And starting at the age of 5, I take my granddaughters to science camp. That's what I pay for. I don't take them to ballet lessons. I don't, you know, they go to science camp. They're, if I'm their grandma, they go to science camp. Period, end of story. And we have a great time. So I'm encouraged to see, and I hope it's true in many other cities as well, that institutions that can influence people and provide these opportunities for parents who maybe aren't scientists themselves, I mean, my poor granddaughters, all they get for gifts is science kits, you know? Stormwater management, science kit. I mean, it's just kind of interesting. They don't get ponies.
And then about the church. How many churches are giving the message to girls
Absolutely. That
science is a wonderful opportunity?
Well, kids in general.
Kids in general. Yeah. Kids in general don't get much.
How many churches are even discussing science
at all?
What would be some suggestions for things we could do in our churches to bring that in?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I'm thrilled that you, Jennifer and the Dozer, put this out.
Right, that's to help the churches.
So many pastors are so scared to touch this topic, and we can break down the fear among pastors that it's going to split the congregation wide open and all the young earth are going to leave if they mention anything. You know,
right.
We
have a number of ASA members, men and women, who are actively engaged in adult ed or young children's ed in their churches, and maybe we should do a session on that next year to bring those people forward and have them share.
My husband does that.
Yeah.
I just gave a 12-week session of faith and science.
That's a good one.
Yeah.
The other thing is, we can
make a church in Austin.
Yeah, there you go.
If the pastor's too afraid to mention science because he's seen as the one who has to bridge everybody, but he can allow people under to promote science without risking his,
One more thing. We just came from a church in another town. I'm not going to say where, but where Walter was really kind of pushed down because of his views, and he was given a very puny class the last 8 weeks we lived there, and so we said when we moved, we were going to find a church where he could blossom.
Uh-huh.
And we
I
did,
teach.
And we are just, he's just all over, he has 11 speaking engagements this fall, and
That's
we're
great.
Retired. So, I mean, he's not retired at all. He's actually working almost as hard as he did retired.
Yeah.
But it's just, you have to look for those pastors that have some kind of knowledge about science, because the ones that have no knowledge of science are the ones that will not listen.
Right. I think ASA we can help share info on that one. That's within our skill set.
Biologos and the Dozer program are both great resources for lots of different kinds of avenues for church leaders to get involved. And I think if we all synergize, we can share ideas together between organizations. So it's very complementary. We don't all do the same thing, but different kinds of
Good point. We have a daughter who has raised three children, homeschooled three children. Two are in college, and one is a junior in high school. And she's going to school for the first time this fall. And my daughter just took a fifth grade math job at this gigantic school in Austin. That's kind of a big school that influences all the other schools, private schools in Texas. And she's very, very happy, but I think the reason she's like that is not because of me. It was because of Walter, because I'm not math-oriented at all.
Yeah.
But he is, and she's like him.
Uh-huh.
And so she's very happy because she has a role model, and it's her dad.
Yeah.
And she's been tutoring high-level math for about 2 years. So she's very qualified, and they were very interested in her because she was doing calculus and trig and algebra 1 and 2 and all these other things. And so they hired her, and now she's already in teacher in service right now, and she's already tutoring the other teachers.
Yeah.
So she's not at all worried about herself,
and men
can
be excellent role
models. Person, and she always has been.
Yeah.
But she also says, I'm not really gifted. I'm not a gifted math person. I'm just a person who's been in math and been interested for many, many years.
Mm-hmm.
Therefore, I'm better than the people around me because I've perceived it. Sorry.
Okay. Yes, we're a little bit over time now, so I want to give people the freedom to go off to the next thing. But
next thing.
We'll be here for a few minutes. If you have questions, feel free to come on up.
Let's take a break.